This is Taking Aim with
Rob Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, May 18th, for our second round of the Special Fund Drive program. Today we're here for 3 hours. And by the way, next week also we'll be on from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m., cutting away for the important WBAI news, and returning again from 7 till 9 p.m. This special edition is the pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid, a 2-CD full 160 minutes for your $100 contribution. It includes a presentation I made called It's All One War Now on U.S. intelligence creating false flag terror operations since World War II. Ralph Schoenman gives the further details of the underlying politics of 9/11, and then there's a portion of question and answer. These were presentations which received great standing ovations that were at the 9/11 inquiry, the People's Inquiry, not the cover-up 9/11 commission, March 27, 2004, the first edition of the 9/11 inquiry, which is moving to Toronto, where Ralph will be speaking over the Memorial Day weekend, and then we'll move on to New York City, and we hope you'll attend when it's in New York, and I hope that I'll be able to join Ralph there. Also, for your $150 contribution, we have both the Pattern of State Terror and a bonus package, the Technique of Infamy, the 9/11 Commission Cover-Up, a special program that Ralph did with KPFA's Guns and Butter producer Bonnie Faulkner, his analysis of the 9/11 Commission. And that's the $150 contribution. A regular membership to WBAI is $50, and students, seniors, and low income is a $25 contribution. The telephone number is 212-209-2950. Again, that's 212-209-2950. Those of you listening on the Internet, remember this is your important long-distance call, 212-209-2950. Well worth it. In our first hour, we listened to a couple of excerpts, the beginning and the end, actually, of Ralph's presentation. And I'm sure you were as riveted as I was here, even hearing it again. It's a type of presentation you can listen to again and again. I want to start off this hour with portions of the presentation I did on Madrid. But before I do that, I want to point to two headlines. One appeared in The Guardian in England, Friday, April 30th. Macedonia says police faked terror attack. Yes, this was followed in the New York Times on May 17th, a fake Macedonia terror tale that led to death. Yes, fake terror attacks, and we had 7 people dying as a result. Pakistanis and an Indian immigrants that had been brought across the border, housed for one night, given food and an apartment and clothing, and then brought to a place where a special police unit called the Lions, formed by and under the direct control of the Macedonian Interior Minister, and they had been trained for anti-terrorist operations in a village close to Skopje, and in February, and these immigrants were slaughtered, and a fake scene was set up so that it was going to look as if it was a terror attack. Terror attack closely aligned to the same supposed terror attacks of September 11, 2001, and this took place roughly 2 months after September 11th. A fake Macedonia terror tale. Ralph?
Well, that's the paradigm. It is the same pattern with respect to Chechnya. When there were buildings blown up in Moscow, it was later disclosed that it was the KGB and Putin's own operatives who were doing that. When an Al-Qaeda network was disclosed and it's said to have been operating in Gaza, it was found that it was the Israeli Mossad that had formed it, had peopled it, had controlled it, and had put out statements in its name. That's a matter of the documented record. And now we have most recently, Maya, this dramatic beheading of Nicholas Berg, which was deployed at a rather critical moment to distract us from the growing, enormous exposure and scandal of the systemic and systematic torture that characterizes the U.S. Treatment of prisoners. As the Red Cross observed, 90% of the detainees in Al-Khraib and in Bahram and in the detention centers of the United States have no role even in resistance or occupation in Iraq or Afghanistan. These are random individuals being terrorized by the United States. 90% of them. And now with respect to the Nicholas Berg decapitation video, the expose begins to show us the pattern. Towards the end of the video, at frames 9306 through 9368, a man with a U.S. military cap can be seen with a quarter of his head in the video. His neck, left ear, and part of his cap and visor are visible. Indeed, in the important report in Los Angeles by La Voz de Aztlán news bulletin, the video has been established as a fraud by a distinguished medical doctor. As the article states, the first casualty of war is the truth, and this one is no exception. American Nicholas Berg of Philadelphia is seen to be apparently beheaded. Not only were the purported, and I'm quoting, not only were the purported screams of Nick Berg not in synchrony with the decapitation, but there was a total lack of blood spurting out as his jugular and other veins and arteries were nominally being cut. We forwarded the video to Dr. Raul Castro Guevara, a noted surgeon and forensic authority in Mexico City, for his expert opinion. He concluded as follows, quote, there is no way that the individual in this video was alive or his heart pumping while his neck was cut. The doctor adds that when the heart is pumping, cutting a person's artery causes copious amounts of blood to spurt all over the immediate environment. In this instance, he states, this video is an indisputable fraud. There's more documentation and more details about the intelligence operation that we're witnessing here. The U.S. authorities had this man in custody. The orange jumpsuit, the very plastic chair in which he was seated, the same that was used for U.S. detainees in Abu Ghraib.
Well, Ralph, this is not one of our regular Taking Aim programs. This is our special program to raise funds for WBAI. We want to thank all of you who are listening and those of you who are tuning in for the first time. And you're the wonderful programs on the Middle East, and we'd like to introduce you to Taking Aim. We're normally on from 5 to 6. And today, this is a special time, a special opportunity for you to contribute to maintain WBAI on the air, bringing you the insightful, the incisive, and the cultural programming that you've become accustomed to and is unique across the country. 212-209-2950. Our gift to you is the Pattern of State Terror from 9/11 to Madrid, a 2-CD package for a $100 contribution. And for a $150 contribution, we have the added bonus of the Technique of Infamy, the 9/11 Commission cover-up. We'll be back with you, but first we want to go to the beginning of my presentation, It's All One War Now.
After the bombings that took place in Madrid on March 11th, 911 days after the events of September 11th, I decided to speak about who's the enemy now. Who's the enemy now is a headline that blared across Time magazine on the March 29th issue in an article by Johanna McCary. And in it she states, new networks of jihadists emerge faster than the United States and its allies can arrest or kill them. Counterterrorism experts believe that a new, more elusive generation of extremists, apparently inspired by Al-Qaeda's ruthless vision, men like Jamal Zugan, 30 years old, a cell phone salesman arrested for the Madrid bombings, and Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, 37 years old, the Jordanian suspected of orchestrating violence in Iraq, that these two have taken up the banner, and so have others like them. Barely recognizable, she continues, even to officials who make a living tracking terrorists. The new jihadists proved in Madrid that they can evade detection while they hatch their plots. And no one knows where they're going to strike next. So writes Johanna McCreary. And this is something that was orchestrated and played out throughout the press. Whether you read the New York Times, the San Francisco Chronicle, Time Magazine, or Newsweek, striking fear and terror in the minds of people worldwide was more important to our capitalist rulers than any evidence. In fact, Jamal Zugan had stated that he was home asleep, and he had been tracked by intelligence agents in Europe since August 2001. And those loosely connected to him, such as the Syrian-born Abu Imad Eldin Barkas Yakers, known as Abu Dada, had been tried, actually, in Spain, but no evidence ever linked him to the events of 9/11. Now, across Time magazine, it stated, "Who's the enemy now?" And it discussed what had taken place in Madrid and what would take place worldwide. But if we look on the internet at the Israeli intelligence weekly, Debka, which we refer to often in Taking Aim, on February 25th, just a couple of weeks before, Debka wrote, "Al-Qaeda builds a Euro army." So the events of Madrid had the stage set by the article that appeared in Debka. And I quote now from Debka. "Warnings of Al-Qaeda's continuing threat came Tuesday, February 24th, from Washington and London, as well as by one of its top leaders. Addressing the Senate Intelligence Committee, CIA Director George Tenet spoke of the spread of Al-Qaeda's radical agenda to local groups who now threaten the United States and are capable of 9/11 scale attacks. British Interior Secretary David Blunkett announced new stringent measures throughout Great Britain to combat terror because, he said, a terrorist attack on Britain was, quote, inevitable. Now, the reason was clearly stated by Debka's title, Al-Qaeda builds a Euro army. Note, this is February 25th. And they explain, Al-Qaeda has been discovered by Debka's intelligence sources to be recruiting manpower in Europe at a brisk pace in a push into the continent personally advocated by Osama bin Laden. The European arena, continues Debka, is showing a dangerous dynamism. And this is what it shows in terms of the network of Al-Qaeda and other groups. According to French counterintelligence, Al-Qaeda has recruited in France alone between 35 and 45,000 men and is organizing them into military-style units. Remember, this is February 25th. They meet regularly for training in the use of weapons and explosives, combat tactics, and indoctrination, and are controlled from local and district command centers on the organization's National French Command. Note this, a National French Command for the Al-Qaeda network. Then we have Germany. Al-Qaeda, according to Debka, has recruited 25,000 to 30,000 men in Germany alone, plus the 35 to 45,000 in France. And then the British domestic intelligence agency, MI5, states that there are 10,000 Al-Qaeda operatives in Britain. And they state this is causing Blunkett ample concern. So we have 35 to 45,000 plus 30,000 plus 10,000, and this doesn't even count the Balkans. Because, Depka states, Italy itself doesn't have very many, and it doesn't have to, because the Balkan countries of Albania, Kosovo, and Macedonia are the source of weapons, money, false documents, and these go out to other European bases. And it continues, finally, by stating unknown numbers are being enlisted in Belgium, Switzerland, Holland, Sweden, and Norway. Add it all up, and you have over 100,000 new Al-Qaeda terrorists throughout Europe. But it gets more serious. Recruitment across Europe, Depka says, continues apace and in greater secrecy than ever because they are building a Euro army. But note, these are not Arabs. These are not people from Algeria. These are not people from Morocco. They are not from Saudi Arabia. These are native Europeans freshly converted to Islam. And it is called the White Recruitment Drive or, quote, coffee shop conscription. Operational cells. I am telling you, this is straight from Israeli intelligence. Operational cells are recruiting these agents, and they patronize ordinary cafes on the high streets of Europe's major cities, where they blend into the crowd. Consider what this means if you're a European. It means anytime you go into a cafe and you look over your shoulder, who are you seeing really? None other than another of the white recruitment drive or the coffee shop conscription. Unit-level meetings or training sessions are attended by 30 to 40 men. Imagine all this intelligence they have. And it takes place under the cover of social activity, such as holiday camps in the remote parts of Europe. Here we have, who is the enemy now? According to Depka, the enemy is everyone. Now, while Depka set the stage at the end of February for what was taking place in Madrid, the blueprint of Madrid was actually drawn up in Italy. And if we look particularly at events that took place 24 years before, we see something strikingly similar to what took place in Madrid on March 11th. At 10:25 a.m. on August 2nd, 1980, a powerful bomb exploded in the second-class waiting room at Bologna Railway Station. It was the height of the summer, it was the holiday season, and the station was crowded. 85 people were killed, 200 injured, in what was considered the worst atrocity in Europe since the end of World War II. Seven of the victims were children under the age of 15, and one of them was a girl of three. The bombing in Bologna shocked the world, and particularly the people in Italy, much as the bombing in Madrid shocked the people of Spain. However, it was not a singular affair. Eight bomb attacks had taken place over a 15-year period. From December 12, 1969, similar bomb attacks, with the beginning of the bombing of the Banca Nazionale dell'Agricoltura in the Piazza Fontana in Milan, and three explosions that took place in Rome on the very same day, December 12, 1969. And these continued until the blowing up of a train, again a train, near Florence, on December 23, 1984. If you look only at these train bombings, these eight bomb attacks, and as investigators, investigating magistrates, it did in Italy, and later a parliamentary commission, they all concluded that the violence was part of what was called a strategy of tension that was fostered and funded by the Italian secret services directly, and by foreign secret services, notably the United States Central Intelligence Agency. The sole purpose was to prevent the rise of the Italian communist power, to prevent it from achieving power through the electoral process. Now, the Communist Party in Italy was the largest in Western Europe, and from 1972 to 1976, it came close to taking over from the Christian Democratic Party as the largest party in Italy, and with an alignment with the Socialist Party, could have made a bid to form a new government. But if you look at a progression of attacks that took place and the vast terror apparatus that was created by the CIA, Italian capitalists, and notably through their main party, the Christian Democratic Party, you note that in 1972, there were 595 attacks, and it rose to 1,353 attacks. These are terrorist assaults in Italy in 1976, and increased up to 2,513 in 1979, and then tapered down because people, as orchestrated through the press, believed that these were the work of the Red Brigades and other left groups. The early phase of the bombings, which lasted until 1974, were indiscriminate bombings and not attributed. They were directed against the public, and they were later revealed to be in conjunction with a series of right-wing coup plots. Now, the principal purpose of all these bombings was to provide an excuse for military intervention, attributing responsibility, as I said, they did, to left-wing or anarchist groups. And then you would have the police and the Secret Service follow up on those leads. A good example took place in 1973. Then a notorious right-winger was caught as he injured himself handling a bomb that blew up in a train toilet. Now, he was not supposed to be caught. Before he was caught, he had walked up and down the train displaying a copy of Lotta Continua, Continuous Struggle, a left newspaper. This is very similar to what Lee Harvey Oswald was doing, holding a copy of a militant in that forged photo. So again, as the intelligence operation here in the United States tried to pin it on the left with a fake copy of Oswald, so we have in Italy an operative walking up and down the train with a copy of Lotta Continua. The strategy of tension was to promote chaos, to undermine the economy, and to create a situation of political tension, fear, and hostility. And it did. On October 31st, 1974, General Vito Micheli, then the head of Italian intelligence, was arrested on a charge of conspiring to overthrow the government by provoking an armed insurrection. He stated then that a parallel intelligence group had been formed under a secret agreement with the United States, and it was done within the framework of NATO. His co-conspirator, Lieutenant Colonel Amos Spiazzi, who was also in the Secret Service, the military Secret Service, when he later was arrested, many years later, he said that he had joined a right-wing group called Rosa dei Venti, Compass Rose, on the specific orders of his higher-ups in the Italian intelligence, then the SID.
Hello? Are we on the air? Okay, thank you. This is Maya Schoen and Ralph Schoenman of Taking Aim, and you've been listening to a portion of It's All One War Now, my presentation on March 27, 2004, at Phase 1 of the International Inquiry into 9/11. This took place in San Francisco. The next phase, Phase 2, will be in Toronto, and Phase 3 will be in New York City. It's part of our 2-CD package, The Pattern of State Terror from 9/11 to Madrid. Yours for a contribution of $100 to WBAI. We have a bonus for you of The Technique of Infamy, the 9/11 Commission cover-up, Ralph Schoenman's comments on the 9/11 hearings, and that's for a contribution of $150. Taking Aim has been on the air since December 28, 2001. We've produced over 120 unique programs, ripping away the facade and the lies and the cover-ups of the power structure and imperialist rulers. We know you depend on Taking Aim, and it's only WBAI that brings it to you. Think of what it's like across the country, living in communities where you have only the official media. Ralph?
Well, I was thinking, Maya, as I reflect upon these propaganda exercises that go by the name of 9/11 hearings, the official hearings that are unfolding today, where you hear the calculated deception and distortion and lie in which they have witnesses stating that the Al-Qaeda's terrorists who carried out 9/11 are now preparing the next wave of attacks on landmarks. And they cite the Brooklyn Bridge and the Holland Tunnel and the Statue of Liberty and so on. These are, in fact, the very FBI-promoted operations exposed by established media, actually, in the Village Voice, New York Times, Los Angeles Times at the time of the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center. And fathered upon the blind Egyptian cleric whose mosque in Brooklyn and in New Jersey was targeted by the Federal Bureau of Investigation in New York, sending in a high-level Egyptian intelligence agent and FBI operative, Imad Ali Salem, to entice young men to meetings which were recorded while the FBI operative proposed the bombing of the World Trade Center, the bombing of the Brooklyn Bridge, the blowing up of the Holland Tunnel and the Lincoln Tunnel, the very things that now in this 9/11 official inquiry are lyingly imputed to a terror apparatus that is the state itself. The evidence is overwhelming, and our heroic Lynn Stewart, who is defending the blind Egyptian cleric, who is the patsy, the fall guy in this, has chapter and verse. It's because of that defense of the blind Egyptian cleric that she herself has been targeted by Ashcroft. And I have not the patience to refrain from saying, brothers and sisters, that I have listened to Pacifica commentary, which is little short of pimping for the Imperium. It puts me in mind of the importance of Taking Aim. It puts me in mind of the importance of sustaining the kind of programming on WBAI that allows us to separate ourselves from the official and corporate media with their calculated rationale and apologia for the established order. It puts me in mind of the importance of documenting the actual circumstances that permit imperial war, that allow the repression of our people, that provide the cover for the subjugation of starving hundreds of millions around the planet, that provide the rationale for the cuts in our living standards, for the assault on our health care, on our housing, on our education, on the outsourcing of jobs to the sweatshops of the world, all under the cover of a war of terror. And here we have programming that is designed to arm people with information, and that's the function of Taking Aim, and that's the importance of a real free speech radio, and not a succumbing to the blandishments and the seduction of official media. We at Free Speech Radio, WBI, stand for something else, and Taking Aim stands for something else. Sustain us. Call 212-209-2950. When callers called in response to that commentary to voice their own documented views on the realities of the state terror of 9/11 and the state terror of the Madrid operation and the state terror of 1993, they were treated with something less than respect, disgraceful. Support real free speech radio. Taking Aim, WBAI. Keep us on the air.
212-209-2950. There are three things we're asking you to do. Three things we're asking you to do. All of them a pleasure. I wouldn't ask anyone to do anything that it wasn't pleasurable for you. And those of you who received the Taking Aim Bulletin, our free bulletin available to us, just write to us at takingaim@pacbell.net or takingaim@wbai.org. Three things. The first and foremost is support WBAI. And our gift to you is this two-CD package, The Pattern of State Terror from 9/11 to Madrid. Now, we're doing this. We're looking at the pattern of state terror as more and more U.S. rulers, the imperial rulers, are saying that we're here for a permanent war. It's really a permanent war with no end in sight. That was what President Bush had stated right after 9/11, and it's been followed by Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld over and over again. It's what you're hearing in these 9/11 commission hearings. This is a war without end. And that's why it was so important to look at what took place in Italy with the development by the United States, and you'll hear more about it in the Pattern of State Terror, chapter and verse, of how the United States set out to prevent a government established combination of the Communist Party and the Socialist Party that would reflect the interests of the people. And instead, and they incorporated the mafia, they incorporated the most rabid forms of gangsterism. They created a complete terror network within Italy. And that's why today we also started with what is going on in Macedonia, what's been revealed, because in Macedonia, where they killed these poor immigrants who had come from Pakistan and India, the first thing they said is that they had been suspected of connections with Al-Qaeda. Suspected of connections with Al-Qaeda, the mythical Al-Qaeda network that was established and has been documented to have been established by the Central Intelligence Agency itself. So 212-209-2950, The Pattern of State Terror from 9/11 to Madrid. We're only going to play excerpts because we want you to have this, to share it with your friends, your family. We know that because programs that we've done years ago, lectures, are still circulating. And people are always telling us, oh, I heard a program you did in 1990, and we go and speak in Harlem, and people are still distributing those shows. So we know that the pattern of state terror is something that 10, 15 years, you're going to say, is still a historic document. And for a $150 contribution, we have the bonus for you of the Technique of Infamy, the 9/11 Commission cover-up, Ralph's comments on one of the 9/11 Commission hearings, and those are comments that you're not going to hear anywhere else, even on Pacifica, as you know, Ralph strips away the lies. 212-209-2950. Ralph?
I think about Operation Armageddon that the Atlantic Monthly was pushing in its March issue, and then orchestrated by Ted Koppel on Nightline, ABC's Nightline, when they had actually participants in the plans for Operation Armageddon celebrating the fact that Congress would be suspended, the Constitution suspended, martial law imposed. Not the wet dream of right-wing nuts, no, brothers and sisters. A systematic, planned operation which disclosed itself on ABC Nightline with some of the participants, Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney, since 1980, point men for national security officers and military personnel and Defense Intelligence Agency figures, meeting on a regular basis in bunkers to take control of the U.S. government, a designed plan, and that allows us to understand what 9/11 represents, because only part of the 9/11 state terror operation unfolded. The plane that was shot down that didn't hit the Congress, the plane that was said to be heading for the White House, these were parts of an overall operation which is yet fully to unfold. And that's what we're constantly being shown and constantly being promised in the Washington Post, in the Los Angeles Times, in Newsday, in Newsweek, in all the major media of communication, in U.S. News and World Report for May 24th. The current issue. From the White House, a nightmare scenario is the headline. White House officials say they have a working premise about the presidential elections. A terror attack is going to happen. We assume, said a top administration official, quotes U.S. News and World Report, that an attack is going to take place leading up to the election. It will happen here. The official stated, the first attack on Washington will be the Capitol, the target of the 9/11 jet that crashed in Pennsylvania. After that, more frequent attacks in Washington and other major cities leading up to the election. To prepare, the administration is holding secret drills to make sure top officials know what to do. There was a sense, said one official involved in these drills, of confusion on 9/11, and now we have a sense of order. And the article continues, unclear is the political impact, though the Bushies think the nation will rally around the president. Quote, I can tell you one thing, stated an official sternly, we won't be like Spain, unquote. In other words, the mass revolt of the Spanish people against the staged terror attack, which was intended to terrify people into sustaining the Francoist Aznar regime, backfired on them. Maya described Operation Gladio in Italy. 40 years of Central Intelligence Agency terror attacks in city after city. The bombing in the train station of Bologna was a model for what unfolded in Madrid. The fake terror apparatus, the false flag operations, the terrorizing of the American people, the attempt to intimidate us, to cow us into acceptance of this imperial agenda, a degenerate society of gangster cliques, 2% of the population, now 1% of the population, owning 90% of the wealth. That is the root of our dilemma and our crisis. That is why we have to have truth spoken to power, free speech radio that addresses these questions, taking aim on the air, WBAI sustained. Call 212-209-2950, brothers and sisters. Keep this broadcasting going.
I said there were three things that we wanted you to do, and three things that you're going to be excited to do. The first, of course, is contributing to WBAI, 212-209-2950, so that you can share with your friends and your family and listen to again and again, because you're only hearing excerpts today and next week, of the pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid, a two-CD package for your $100 contribution. For your $150 contribution, we have the bonus of the Technique of Infamy, the 9/11 Commission cover-up, along with the pattern of state terror. Regular membership to WBAI is $50, and the students, seniors, and low-income, it's $25. It's an incredible commitment to WBAI, as we all make a commitment to you. Remember, you can put it on your credit card or a bank debit card or send a check or money order. Now, that's the first and foremost thing that you can do today. The second is to support Lynn Stewart's defense. Now, here we have the media, and then we also have in the courtroom as we come under attack. And as Ralph mentioned, the defense of Lynn Stewart is first and foremost. And those of you in the New York area, the jury selection starts May 19th, and your presence is critical. The judge has shown a bias against Lynn Stewart, and this is Attorney General John Ashcroft's first and foremost priority is to attack our lawyers, those who defend us, and particularly Lynn Stewart, who has been so stalwart in the expose of the 9/11 cover-up. First and foremost, May 19th, please go to her website, www.lynnestewart.org for the particulars. So that's defending in the court. And the third is all out to support the Million Worker March that's going to take place October 16th, 2004. Now is the time for endorsements and to build committees. And you can go to the Million Worker March website, www.millionworkermarch.org, for more details. WBAI as well as KPFA are very important links in building the Million Worker March. As Ralph is describing the situation, it doesn't have to be this way. I have to tell you particularly that in California, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, only in California, after all, we had Ronald Reagan and now Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Terminator, who was terminating both the education system and health care for the seniors, low-income seniors, and disabled. And he had in front of him children with cerebral palsy, their parents, and other people with disabilities flocking to Sacramento. In a scene, thousands of people, he just couldn't make those cuts. It was impossible. And also, we had children from the schools in Richmond marching along the highways from the San Francisco Bay Area all the way up to Sacramento in a scene that was reminiscent of the marches of Cesar Chavez. School children marching along the highways because they don't have textbooks, they don't have papers, they don't have sports programs, and their schools leak. Now, this is what's going on in California. School children, people with disabilities, seniors, and workers. Everyone is banding together. Everyone is demonstrating. And we can do it. We can push back the assault on working people. Your participation in the Million Worker March is critical. And first and foremost is our means of communication program, such as Taking AIM and WBAI, that brings it to you. 212-209-2950. And as you know, we like to give a gift to you for your contribution. And our gift is the Pattern of State Terror from 9/11 to Madrid, excerpts of which you're hearing this week and next, and also for your $150 contribution, the Technique of Infamy, the 9/11 Commission cover-up. That's 212-209-2950. I want to play another excerpt from the description of what took place in Italy, and I'd also like to say that in this presentation, portion that we're not going to hear today, there is a complete analysis of the setting up of the Al-Qaeda network by the U.S. intelligence. Ralph, did you want to say something first?
I was reminded as you spoke, Maya, about the Gruppenführer. Gruppenführer Schwarzenegger had a chief economic advisor. His name was Warren Buffett. Who do you think is the chief economic advisor to John Kerry? Warren Buffett. Who do you think is calling for an increase in the number of troops in Iraq and for sustaining the occupation? John Kerry, outflanking Bush to his right. Who is calling for an intensification of police surveillance in the United States? John Kerry, who said that Bush isn't focused enough and that people should be arrested before they act. It's one big property party with two names. And the Million Worker March mobilization is about putting forward a working people's agenda that holds all these politicians' feet to the fire as we mobilize in our own name to stop the apparatus of the state in its gilded course of suppression, lies, and subjugation.
We want to thank all of you who are calling WBAI at 212-209-2950. We're coming to you today by telephone from Vallejo, California. Usually we're in the studios at KPFA where we record our program that comes to you direct over WBAI and on the internet at www.wbai.org. And we want to thank all the wonderful staff at WBAI that makes it possible, and for the high fidelity sound that you hear each week and not our telephone lines of today. 212-209-2950. Please make your contributions now. We can't hear the phones ringing. We know that there are wonderful volunteers in the pledge room. We want to thank each and every one of them, and we want to thank you beforehand. 212-209-2950. We're going to another excerpt, and then we're going to be thanking some of you on air. So please let the people in the tally room know that you'd like your name mentioned.
And let's look more closely at the CIA and its work with the various levels of Italian intelligence. This
Ralph or Maya,
and only came out until 1990, but most of it came out in 2000, only recently, when there was an Italian parliamentary commission, and it stated that all these events, this terror apparatus, the right-wing paramilitary, and the infiltration into the Red Brigades had been going back to World War II, and was pursued by every administration, be it Democratic Party or Republican Party, every administration. A top-secret memorandum of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, dated May 14, 1952, reveals the existence of the plan codenamed Demagnetized. Now, Demagnetized was designed specifically to lessen the influence of communist parties in both France and Italy. It had evolved from what was called the Stay Behind Network that had been created by CIA Director Alan Dulles, who saw a communist under every stone. And with the Stay Behind Network, he was going to build a secret anti-communist guerrilla force across Europe. To that end, a series of political, paramilitary, and psychological operations. Now, I'm quoting here now from this Joint Chiefs of Staff memo. It states specifically, to that end, a series of political, paramilitary, and psychological operations were to be employed, end quote. And the man charged with implementing the Italian end of this, which was the most active end because of the relation of forces with the Italian Communist Party, the man to head this was the head of Italian military intelligence at the time, General Giovanni Di Lorenzo, who later himself would be accused of a military coup in the summer of 1964. Who on the U.S. end was placed in charge of Demagnetize? At this end, it is someone who you know well. It was none other than William Colby. William Colby, who later became the CIA station chief in Saigon, Vietnam, in 1959, developed there the Phoenix program, the horrible, notorious Phoenix program that he started in 1968, which was to take 55,000 lives, and some estimates have it up to 100,000 lives. And then he became the CIA director awarded for his efforts in Vietnam, and he was the director in 1973 until President Ford replaced him with none other than George Herbert Walker Bush. Colby was proud of what he did in Italy. He described it in his memoirs, how he was sent to Italy in the 1950s to run, quote, what was by far the CIA's largest covert political action program undertaken until then, or indeed since. Colby then states his specific task was, quote, to prevent Italy from being taken over by the communists in the 1958 elections and thus prevent NATO defenses from being circumvented by the PCI. In fact, Colby points out that it was the possibility of the Communist Party winning the 1948 elections 10 years earlier that led the United States to form the Office of Policy Coordination, which first set out the CIA's responsibilities and gave it the capability to take covert political propaganda and paramilitary operations in the first place. This is William Colby speaking. According to Di Lorenzo, who was the head of Italian intelligence, Colby himself ordered Di Lorenzo to plant microphones in the papal apartments and bugs in the office of the Italian president's official Rome residence, the Quirinale Palace. So it wasn't just to set up paramilitary groups, but it was to spy even on the Pope and the president of Italy. By 1956, a secret agreement between the U.S., the CIA, and the Italian military intelligence was formalized as Operation Gladio. And Gladio is the Italian word for a Roman short sword. There were 139 arms caches that were buried at secret locations throughout Italy, and training was done by British intelligence, and similar stay-behind networks were set up in most countries of Western Europe, including Austria, Yugoslavia, Belgium, Holland, Norway, Portugal, Finland, Sweden, and Switzerland, which was supposed to be neutral. Later, Rome Station Chief William Harvey himself described the plans of the CIA to destabilize the Italian Prime Minister Aldo Moro, who at the time was attempting to reach an understanding with the Socialist and the Communist parties in order to offset their ability to win and to create a government on their own. Harvey suggested that Colonel Renzo Rocca, who was the director of military intelligence, it changed his names in Italy, it was now the SIFAR, their Office of Industrial Counter-Espionage, Harvey had said that the U.S. CIA proposed that Rocca use his, quote, action squads, these paramilitary groups that had been set up by the CIA and British intelligence, that they, quote, carry out bombings against the Christian Democrat Party offices and certain newspapers in the North, which were to be attributed to the left. Now, Harvey was in possession of lists containing more than 2,000 right-wingers belonging to these paramilitary groups who were available for use against the Communist Party and other left groups. We have to put this in perspective. It is not a secret cabal of intelligence operatives. In fact, Fiat, the largest industrial complex in Italy at the time, had extensive relations with CIFAR and used the military intelligence operatives to spy upon its own workforce and to disrupt union activities. It's also instructive to now examine where all these paramilitary groups were trained. And this, I'm going into what took place in Italy because it has direct bearing on what took place at 9/11 and what took place in Madrid, Bali, and elsewhere around the world. The rightists, the paramilitary rightists, as well as agents, these intelligence agents who were to infiltrate the Red Brigades and later were involved in the kidnapping and murder of Aldo Moro himself, they were trained at a secret NATO base near Capo Marghiu on the west coast of Sardinia between 1969 and 1975. Now, this base had been a small base that was upgraded and designed by American technicians. And many of the students were had to be flown in by military aircraft from an airport outside Rome. They had to be flown in because this base was inaccessible by road. It was that secret. At the end of each course, the graduates were allowed to keep their weapons and explosives that they had been given upon arrival. 40 independent cells, it's estimated, each recruiting more people. So they had 622 leaders of these paramilitary cells, and they were to recruit at least 15,000 in all throughout Italy. Does this remind you of the Debka figures? It's important to understand that while the paramilitary right-wing troops were on the ground conducting these attacks and bombing, the leadership itself included people in the highest council of state and industry throughout Italy. For instance, the group P2, Propaganda 2, which is an Italian Freemason lodge and had its grand master, Licio Gelli. He was a close friend of Juan Perón, and he also sat in the front rows of the inaugural ceremonies of President Ford, Carter, and Reagan, very closely tied to the United States presidents and the leadership here in the United States. And this is Licio Gelli. Now, I mentioned Licio Gelli particularly, but the membership list, which was later found in Gelli's apartment when it was raided in 1981, you know, when you had these inter-rivalries, showed that 195 high-ranking officers from all branches of the military belonged to P2, and it included the head of the Domestic Secret Service and the head of military intelligence. Now, in The Independent in Great Britain, in November 16, 1990, remember I told you that a lot of this came out in 1991, Charles Richards and Simon Jones reported, quote, "Every member of the crisis committee set up by Francesco Cossiga, who was then the interior minister and later became the president of Italy in 1990, was a member of P2. At a trial of a neo-fascist, Vincent Vinciguerra, that took place in response to a 1972 attack that killed three Carabinieri, Vincent Vinciguerra stated at his trial, quote, "Every bombing in Italy, remember these 2,000 bombings in just one year, after 1969 was ordered by an apparatus belonging to the state, specifically a secret parallel structure of the Interior Ministry." Now let's go back to the Bologna bombing that killed 85 people in 1980. When there was finally a trial, and this trial was obstructed, the investigations that are done by magistrates in Italy, that investigation was obstructed by the intelligence services themselves. What emerged in the trial is that the makings of the bomb in the Bologna railway bombing came from a Gladio arsenal, and the event was linked to Lucio Gelli and the P2 network. The P2 network of the Freemasons that included people from the highest councils of state. In 2000, when a 300-page report, parliamentary report, was released by the Left Democratic Party, which was a former communist party, it pointed the finger at the United States directly. As well, we have these intelligence operatives also pointing the finger at the United States. But if we look at this document of the Left Democratic Party, and we look at the people they interviewed, they state specifically the role of the CIA.
And it is 8 p.m. You're listening to a Taking Aim special with Ralph and Maya, who should be back with us now. Hello, are you there?
Yes, we are.
Ah,
hi.
How are you?
Fine. How are you doing?
Good, good.
This is Maya Schoen and
Ralph Schoenman
of Taking Aim. We're glad to be with all of you, and we're going to need the music to fade out. Hello.
We're glad
to be with all of you on WBAI 99.5 FM and on the Internet at www.wbai.org. First and foremost, I want to remind everyone the telephone number is 212-209-2950. Now, this is a very important fund drive. As you know, WBAI depends upon the contributions of each and every one of us, whether we're volunteers, as Ralph and I are, unpaid producers, or whether we are the listeners at WBAI, and some of us are both, listeners and we volunteer in many different ways, whether in the tally room, with the distribution of the premiums, all sorts of activities, and as producers, engineers, and so forth. And there is a core staff at WBAI, a core staff and electricity bills and infrastructure and towers that have to be endorsed, supported, all the things that that go into bringing you this critical service. Think of what it would be like if WBAI were off the air. I had an example of that last week when I was visiting with my mother in an area where there was no community radio, and it was impossible to have the news, to have dialogue, to have commentary. It is critical. We know you depend on Taking Aim, and that's why during these fund drives, WBAI gives us special three-hour programs to come to you and to offer you our special gifts. this week, for this fund drive, we have the pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid. And the reason we looked at the examples of Madrid and going back to what took place in Italy is because these are the models of what takes place in 9/11. 9/11 and afterward, we do not have to be in a state of permanent war. It is up to each and every one of us. We are in control of our destiny, and part of that control means maintaining WBAI on the air, participating in the defense of Lynn Stewart, as an example, and participating in the Million Worker March, building it so we can really have a show of force and lead on to other activities and organization, political organization. But for right now, most urgently, is to keep WBAI on the air. We cannot maintain a slow fund drive. It takes quite a bit of money to keep WBAI on the air. It is important to have the staff that brings you the news. It is important to have the engineers. It is important to have the people who handle the reception and all the other details of daily life at WBAI. This is your station. It is your opportunity. Think of it as your gift to yourself. This is not a gift to someone else. This is your gift to you and to your family and to your colleagues and to those who are incarcerated and do not have the ability to reach out into the world except through the radio waves of WBAI. 212-209-2950. Ralph?
Well, you know, we do a specific kind of programming. It's cutting-edge programming, brothers and sisters. We're talking about the untold story, the real dynamics of the rulers, what underlies their official propaganda, what is the real dynamic of their policies, and how they impose them, and how they deceive us, and how they attempt to control the thinking and the prospects and the hopes and the aspirations of the vast majority of the people who live in this society. That's the programming we want you to support. Give a vote of confidence to Taking Aim. Call in your contribution and purchase the CDs that allows this Taking Aim cutting-edge program to go on. Maya mentioned that we are speaking to prisoners. We are overwhelmed with requests for information. Every prisoner who asks us for data or for tapes, we provide them free. Prisoners are listening because they know from first-hand experience that black youth are an endangered species in the United States, that the prison-industrial complex has centered on the most exploited and the most vulnerable, the criminalization of poverty. That is the characteristic of this rapacious capitalist order. It is that order which requires permanent war, permanent subjugation of other peoples across the planet whose resources are coveted by the greedy few. We are exposing that reality. And 9/11 and the false flag operations of the intelligence services are the vehicle for this operation. If you are unhappy with the kind of programming that departs from the tradition of free speech radio, make your voice heard now. Support Taking Aim. Make it clear as to what kind of the broadcasting we want on WBAI, what kind of information that we desire to have brought forth. We are not a cover for the official order, and we are not pimps for the Imperium, and we are not sustaining the official corporate media. We are the antithesis of that, and we know that's what our listeners are about, and we know that's what the constituency of free speech radio requires, aspires to have, and will support. Keep it going, brothers and sisters.
While our gift to you today is the pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid, 212-209-2950. I said earlier, we've been broadcasting, Ralph and I, on WBAI, and it's WBAI that took the chance. It's only WBAI at the time that took the chance to put us on the air. We've broadcasted over 120 unique programs, and those since August of 2002 are on our website, thanks to our wonderful volunteers, Pamela Summers and Mark Bill, without whom we wouldn't have this website, and you wouldn't have the opportunity to hear the archive of our shows. And over that time, we did programs such as outing the gentlemen killers of the CIA, setting up the Saudis, because that is definitely what filmmaker Michael Moore and others are trying to do with their pseudo-exposés of 9/11. Smoking guns of 9/11, 9/11 and the capitalist state, because you cannot look at the events of 9/11 without looking at the workings of the capitalist state and the way that rulers seek hegemony over the world. Libya and Lockerbie, the untold story. Target Africa, in which we expose the role of the Central Intelligence Agency in Africa and the role that AIDS plays in the destruction of the peoples of Africa. An important three-part series on crony capitalism, which was a full expose of the Bush family and the workings of Halliburton. And, of course, we did extensive programming on the Middle East, such as The Roadmap, A Dead End for the Palestinian People, and many, many shows about the destruction of Jenin and the moves to expel the Palestinians, because, as you know, Palestine is all of Palestine, and the Zionists have first and foremost one objection and objective, and that is to rid all of Palestine, pre-67, and the territories, the occupied territories of the Palestinian people.
And I shouldn't fail to mention, Maya, that we describe and discuss the extraordinary relationship between the exploitation of our own species and the devastating assault upon other species. In A Vision of Hell, the unspoken horror...
Unspeakable torment of other species.
Yes, the unspeakable torment of other species. We have programmed what it means to harvest other animals, to slaughter them in great cruelty. The actual, literal meaning of the slaughterhouse... sentient creatures with nervous systems, with emotional states, and the capacity of complicated thought, are subjected to the most horrific treatment, and it flows from ownership, it flows from property, it flows from exploitation, and it flows from a system that, when it visits its horrors upon human beings, starts from the premise that it's legitimate to torment other species. That programming, which had an extraordinary response, is not unconnected to what we describe about the rule of capital and the exploitation of our own.
Well, that reminds me, in the same way that there's speciesism or species chauvinism, it is the treating other peoples as other is imperative for the destruction, the torture of the U.S. soldiers, of the first the Vietnamese, or before that the Koreans and the Japanese, and now the Iraqi people. And it came out in one of the newspaper articles today of people capturing prisoners and then saying Alibaba. And it was on our programs, such as the Formula for Totalitarianism, Torture Repression, and the Martial Law State, and Torture at Abu Ghraib, Standard Operating Procedure. We did those two shows long before this recent expose, because we dig deep. We dig deep and we find what is actually going on. As I said, since December 28, 2001, over 120 unique programs, only because WBAI took the chance and you've been showing your support. Now is your opportunity to continue with that support. For your $100 contribution, we offer you The Pattern of State Terror from 9/11 to Madrid, and a bonus of the Ralph's commentary on the 9/11 commission hearings that you won't hear anywhere else. For your $150 contribution, 212-209-2950. Ralph, do you have another comment before we go? We're going to return to Ralph's presentation with some other excerpts of it, and I know people are going to want to hear it, because once you hear it, you're going to be inspired to call.
Well, you know, it's interesting to note that when the Sunni population exploded in uprising in Fallujah, they were answered by an equivalent uprising throughout the Shia south in Iraq. From Karbala to Najaf, an uprising by the Iraqi population, 90% of whom are now acknowledged to consider themselves in resistance to the U.S. occupation. What was the response? all of a sudden a mysterious group, previously unheard from, announced that they were encouraging the Sunni to attack the Shia in the name of Islam. And now, in the aftermath of the orchestration of the torture brigades that have been tormenting and degrading and humiliating and murdering Iraqi prisoners, scandalizing the world, what emerges but a videotape of a man being beheaded, and that same shadowy group that is supposed to have called upon Sunni and Shia to attack each other, not the occupation, but each other, is presented decapitating an American detainee. What was the function of that videotape? It's the same function of the CIA-produced videotapes attributed to Osama bin Laden, punctuated to affect the consciousness of people when the policies of the Pentagon and the Central Intelligence Agency are under assault. The Berg video shows a man with a U.S. military cap in specific frames at the time of the Berg decapitation. And as was documented by La Voz de Aslan on May 16, 2004, at the end of the video at frames 9306 through 9368, a man with a U.S. military cap has his profile visible in the video clearly and unmistakably. In addition to which, the beheading has been exposed by a medical expert and surgeon as a total hoax. The man had been killed long before. The man was dead. He was not beheaded alive. In fact, his body was brought in and plopped on a plastic chair, which is the same plastic chair that was used for the detainees whose photographs were exposed across the world. Same chair, same personnel. What are we looking at here? The standard U.S. military police issued prisoner overalls that Nicholas Berg is wearing in photo one. The orange cover prisoner overalls that Nicholas Berg is wearing are identical to the one that the prisoners are made to wear by U.S. military police in Guantanamo. The white plastic chair that Nicholas Berg is sitting on, as shown in photo one, is identical to the white plastic chair of the now infamous Private Lindy England, sitting on at the Abu Ghraib prison, as shown in photo three. The same white chair can be seen in the photograph when an MP is sodomizing an Iraqi prisoner of war. This is a clear false flag operation. The color and texture of the wall, as shown in the frame, is taken from the video, as shown in photo one and photo six, are identical to those of the Abu Ghraib prison shown in photo four. The most telling evidence that the video of the decapitation of Nicholas Berg was taken inside the Abu Ghraib prison can be detected by performing a frame-by-frame analysis that was actually carried out, revealing frames that come up that are very, very, very identical and clear as those of the video played at normal speed. We are looking at the paradigmatic false flag operation, the timing of which was intended to deflect away from the horror of the U.S. torture in Abu Ghraib. Keep your focus on the reality. Get the kind of truth and documentation that we will present to you relentlessly. Sustain this broadcasting, brothers and sisters.
We cannot present this documentation without your contributions to WBAI. Your contribution of $100 or more, please. Those of you who can afford $1,000, $5,000, even $10,000, as much as you can. And if $100 is difficult for you, get on the phone. Call your friends, your family. This is something you can do together. The family that stays together, the friends that stay together to maintain WBAI. $100 contribution, as well as your membership, you get the pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid. $150 gets you that, plus the bonus of the Technique of Infamy, the 9/11 Commission cover-up. Now, we cannot see the phones, but we want to know that they are ringing off the hook. During many of the fun drives, we get busy signals, and we'd like to have that today. Many people have told us that the Taking Aim premiums are the most coveted, the most desired premiums on WBAI. We depend on you. The station depends on you. We want to hear from you. You can also contact us at takingaim@wbai.org or takingaim@pacbell.net. Those are both our email addresses. Or you can write to us at P.O. Box 6345, Vallejo, that's V-A-L-L-E-J-O, California, 94591. But most of all, the best way to show your appreciation now is to dial 212-209-2950.
We say to you, brothers and sisters, as we did today in a broadcast that we did on the sister station, KPFA, the American people are under siege. Working people and their families are under assault from our own government, a government of liars, a government of murderers, a government of occupiers, a government of torturers, a gangster clique. And the workers are being called upon by the longshore workers, Local 10, to mobilize in their own name on their own agenda. And there's been an avalanche of response from Teamsters, from communications workers, from healthcare workers, from postal workers across the United States, labor federations in Charleston, South Carolina, from Troy, New York, from Albany, New York, from Bangor, Maine, San Francisco, California, from the Northern California labor federations, from Monterey Bay to the South Bay. There's an avalanche of support for the mobilization in our own name to speak back to the perpetrators of these crimes and to mobilize against them, brothers and sisters. This programming is part of that struggle. Taking Aim is indispensable to it. WBAI speaks for us. Free Speech Radio, sustain the broadcasting, please.
And that's 212-209-2950. Many of you are listening on the internet, and you too have telephones. 212-209-2950. It isn't enough to tape Taking Aim over the air each week. The premiums are special. They're high fidelity. They're duplicated at a professional house, and they come to you nicely packaged for you to share with your family, your friends, and your colleagues, and to have a big Taking Aim library. 212-209-2950. But most of all, this is your gift to yourself. Maintaining WBAI and maintaining Taking Aim on the air. Please, now is the time. We are playing excerpts for you today. Only excerpts, because we know you're going to want to have the complete premium. 212-209-2950. As you know, each week we try to look at the issues that you're not going to hear as fully in-depth elsewhere. And we dig deep. We comb the internet. People send us. We want to thank all of you who send us information and articles you see. We look at newspapers from Australia, from New Zealand, from India, from Pakistan, from Latin America, and from Africa and Asia. We go and see what is taking place and what is coming, who is digging deep, and then most of all, we analyze it, and it comes forward to you with a perspective that is the perspective of the people, the perspective of the working class, not the perspective of the rulers that you read in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Guardian, and so forth. Ralph?
U.S. government disavows emails, video traced back to London, not Iraq. What is this story about, brothers and sisters, on May 16th? It's about the decapitation of Nicholas Berg. You may remember that the State Department now claimed that a consular officer in Iraq, who said that the beheaded American Nicholas Berg had been in U.S. custody, was mistaken and that this was erroneous information. Spokeswoman Kelly Shannon stated that the Coalition Provisional Authority in Iraq had sent incorrect information about the detention of the diplomat. How did the family of Nicholas Berg respond? They released their correspondence with U.S. officials. Quote, This is now a communication from Beth Payne, the U.S. consular officer in Iraq, to the father of Nicholas Berg. Quote, I have confirmed that your son, Nicholas, is detained by the U.S. military in Mosul. He was picked up approximately 1 week ago. We will try to provide additional information regarding his detention. Payne repeated that his son was, quote, detained by the U.S. military in an email the same day. And he wrote that he has been kidnapped, in effect, by coalition forces who were questioning him. And it's instructive that what they were questioning him about is a supposed association with Zacharias Massawi. Now, isn't that rather odd? Particularly since Massawi on the BBC declared that he wanted to present evidence to Congress that the Federal Bureau of Investigation had been running 9/11, had wanted it to take place, that he had the documented evidence to present to Congress immediately after the BBC report on the statement by Massawi. The trial was held in camera, and all access to public records of the trial was denied, and the press was barred, and the public shut out. The Nicholas Berg decapitation is part of the reign of terror of the U.S. state itself. There's more documentation to offer you about this, brothers and sisters. But we are here to ask your support. We are telling you the kind of information that allows us to expose the real nature of the terror state and what it represents to our population. Sustain the programming. Please call in your support to 212-209-2950. There will be more about this, you can be sure. We will broadcast continuous information about the fake video of the Berg decapitation. But meanwhile, please, remember that we want to keep this programming going. We want to sustain Free Speech Radio. We want to support WBAI. We want to ask your support for taking aim.
The Pattern of State Terror, from 9/11 to Madrid, two CDs, 160 minutes, and includes a presentation by me, It's All One War Now, presentation by Ralph on details of the underlying politics of 9/11, and a question and answer period that we're going to play excerpts of next week during our Fun Broad special. These were made at the International Inquiry into 9/11, Phase 1, that took place in San Francisco, March 27, 2004, just a little while ago. The Pattern of State Terror. Now, we chose that topic because it's important to understand what is taking place, because they try to confuse us. It's like the torture in Iraq, as if it doesn't follow the pattern of the torture by U.S. soldiers in Vietnam. 212-209-2950, your contribution to WBAI of $100, and as a bonus for a contribution of $150, we also give you the Technique of Infamy, the 9/11 Commission cover-up. Ralph Schoenman's analysis and comments on the 9/11 Commission hearings, such as you will not hear elsewhere, I have to say, such as you will not hear elsewhere, such as you will not hear even on WBAI except from Ralph Schoenman. 212-209-2950. Please call now. We're going to play another excerpt from Ralph's presentation. And I know that after you hear this, if you haven't called, you're definitely going to want to call. And since you're going to call, please call while you're listening. Keep those people in the tally room busy. 212-209-2950. Remember, this is your gift to yourself.
And just before we get back to that, a brief listening reminder. Yes, at 9 o'clock, another very special program. David Acuto in conversation with Michael Parenti, author of The Assassination of Julius Caesar, A People's History of Ancient Rome. Tonight from 9 until midnight. So do stay tuned to your listener-sponsored radio station, WBAI, New York.
What I want to talk about tonight, in brief, is 9/11 and the crisis of imperialism. In the Communist Manifesto, 1848, Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels wrote, "Modern industry has established a world market subject to capitalist control. The bourgeoisie has at last, since the establishment of modern industry in a world market, cornered for itself exclusive political sway. The executive of the modern state is but a committee for managing the common affairs of the whole bourgeoisie. And they state they have resolved all personal worth into exchange, and in place of the numberless indefeasible chartered freedoms, they have set to a single unconscionable freedom, free trade, in a word, exploitation, veiled by religious and political illusion. It is substitute naked, shameless, direct, and brutal exploitation. We have a structure of power in this society, rather like that described in the Communist Manifesto. The New York Times confirms now that 1% of our population owns and controls some 90% of the national wealth. And as you know, we have about 5% of the population of the globe within our national frontiers. So 1% controlling 5% with hegemony over 70% of the natural resources of the planet have an imperium by any criterion and by any definition. Very shortly ago, in the New York Times on February 8th, Richard Goodwin wrote an article called Making the Facts Fit the Case for War. And he begins this article as follows. In 1846, President James Polk announced that Mexican troops had fired on American soldiers on American soil. And he took the country to war that gained it California, New Mexico, and Arizona. Was the disputed soil story true? No. Did Polk distort the information? Almost certainly. He wanted a territory and he needed a war to get it. And then Goodwin describes his own experience in 1961 at the age of 28, fresh, as he said, to the Kennedy White House when he climbed to the upper reaches of the State Department, as he describes it, for a high-level meeting to discuss the planned invasion of Cuba. Almost every top official involved in the operation was there. Richard Bissell, a legendary figure of Cold War intelligence, the man responsible for the U-2 spy planes, assured us that U.S. forces had established themselves and there would be an uprising against Castro. Rather tentatively, I asked Bissell how he had reached this conclusion, and he turned to a general sitting behind him and said rather casually, "We have an NIE on that, don't we?" A classified national intelligence estimate, and the general nodded. In fact, Goodwin says no such intelligence estimate existed. And the article continues with a paradigm of the ways in which the imperium conducts its affairs. Now, many of us have been accused, as you know, of pandering to what is called conspiracy theory when we attempt to discuss the evidence about the structure of power and the nature of such events as 9/11. It's somewhat paradoxical in that virtually at every juridical level, city, county, state, federal, the most commonly deployed judicial device is that of conspiracy. Every prosecutorial adventure, conspiracy to defraud, conspiracy to do this and that, the only conspiracy, as it were, in which they have no interest is that of our rulers. Now, it is true that history is not driven by conspiracy, but it is certainly the case that our tiny oligarchical ruling class conducts its affairs in a conspiratorial manner. Remember the Maine? They blew up a ship in Havana Harbor to provide the pretext for seizing Cuba and then the Philippines in the first major genocide of the 20th century that cost 3 million Filipino lives. The sinking of the Lusitania, which was the casus belli for World War I, as the book by Colin Simpson amply documents, was an event organized and contrived by the United States and Great Britain, signaling the whereabouts of the Lusitania to German U-boats and preparing for the sinking of that ship as the opportunity and the pretext for entering into World War I, where the United States asserted its challenge to imperial domain on the part of its capitalist rivals for their colonial reach in Africa, Latin America, and Asia. Every major imperial war and adventure has proceeded on the basis of such contrivances, such lies, such pretexts, with the hands of the intelligence agencies of the day all over each and every operation. It goes for Pearl Harbor. It's the characteristic mode through which the Korean War was unleashed, with special forces, as I.F. Stone documented in his book, The Hidden History of the Korean War, following their course into North Korea until they elicited the response they intended to provide them with the opportunity on the aegis of the United Nations to invade Korea with a devastation unparalleled up to that time. The Vietnam War itself, on the basis of the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, as we all know, a contrivance. The United States ship was not attacked in the Gulf of Tonkin, although certainly the North Vietnamese would have had every right to have done so. But no such event occurred. And that is the pattern. Now, we have heard tonight about something called Operation Northwoods. I think we should take a moment to look at that. Because in 1962, the decision had been made to create the circumstances for an invasion of Cuba. And so a document was prepared in the National Security Council, and the person who organized that, as was mentioned, is Lyman Limnitzer, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. Every single member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff signed off on that document. Look at Operation Northwoods. It describes the expected hijacking of airplanes and crashing of them into buildings, the assassination of U.S. citizens in Miami and in Washington, D.C., the expected explosion of the rocket carrying John Glenn astronaut. Every one of these events to be imputed to the Cuban Revolution to create a hysteria and a climate of numbed acquiescence in the intended invasion. It went up to the Kennedy brothers, who had in mind their undertakings in Indochina, and stated, according to McNamara, that the hand of U.S. intelligence was too clear in these proposals, and they asked for an alternative. And they got one. And the alternative that was given to them was to send in special forces dressed as soldiers in Cuban uniforms to attack Guantanamo. Now, the Kennedy brothers deferred on that, and the assassination of John F. Kennedy flowed not too long afterwards. What we're looking at here is a pattern of pretext and of lies, the false operations, the false flag operations that define all the major adventures and, in fact, inform the basic changes in understanding of how shifts occur within the ruling class when they fight over the spoils. We must have the Chinese market or we shall have a revolution, stated Senator Fry, the senator from Maine, in 1881. Samoa and the Hawaiian Islands are the first stage of American expansion en route to Asia, said Cabot Lodge in 1895. And McKinley, the Lord has said that the United States has the duty of educating and elevating the Philippines into Christian civilization, and by the grace of God, to do all that we can for our brother nation, for whom Christ also died. And in the next breath he adds, the Philippines are ours forever, and right behind them is the immense Chinese market, and we shall not leave either one. Woodrow Wilson, Herbert Hoover, Franklin Roosevelt, Vernon Jordan, the head of the National Industrial Board, for Franklin Roosevelt declaring that the United States has set its foot on the path of an imperial reach that cannot stop until it has conquered every available market and subdued all potential rivals, subordinating them to American power and American capital. This is the constant, the theme, the expression of an imperium in rapidly advancing crisis, because there has never been a solution on the part of capital to the Great Depression of the 30s, the inexorable cycle. Indeed, at the height of the New Deal, there was an equivalent rate of unemployment as there had been during the time of Herbert Hoover. Indeed, if you look carefully at the statistics of employed and unemployed, the percentages that were employed in the arms industry at the time of the height of unemployment were equivalent to what became the percentages of unemployment after the mad rush for arms began. And this economy became addicted to arms like an addict needs his fix in an ever-increasing doses. Waste production. Capitalism driven to destroy, constantly to cannibalize the infrastructure of a society, and in the process to pauperize the many, both here and overseas, and to pit working people against each other in a mad race to the bottom. That is the underlying dynamic of corporate capital today, and all of their adventures are designed to sustain this process, to mask it, to whipsaw us into numbed acquiescence in order to permit the ever-increasing devastation that follows from a system in terminal decay. This is a crisis of a capitalist order incapable of meeting the most elementary needs of human beings in any part of the world. And in our understanding of such events as those of 9/11, I suggest that we must locate these adventures and these crimes within a structure of power that requires them. It is not a question of one particular politician or another, or even that of an administration, because there is a continuity in the national security apparatus that goes with each successive band of politicians and the two big property parties with one name that define the monopoly of control that the capitalists maintain over the political process in this society. With that 1% controlling 90% of the wealth, they subsidize and monopolize the political process itself. The former head of Avis and American Express, Robert Townsend, calculated in his book Up the Organization that there are but 5,000 people control what he called the commanding heights of the capitalist economy. So with the necessary pretexts that go for sustaining their wars of predation, come such events as 9/11. In 2002, there was an article in the New York Times called The Sunshine Warrior by Bill Keller, which addressed the figure of Paul Wolfowitz, when the then head of the Army, General Shinseki, at the American War College, with a bevy of generals present, announced, as Keller described it, almost to drum rolls, that Wolfowitz had been, in fact, preparing for and organizing for and setting the basis and the table for the interventions in the Arab East since the 1970s. Well, indeed, at the end of the 1970s, there was a document, a seminal document, published by the Mossad by a figure named Oded Yinon, called A Strategy for the 1980s. That signaled the necessity to dismantle each Arab and Middle Eastern state into its ethnic and religious components. And the rationale for this was a war on terror, the category of terror. And if we look with care at the predicament confronting the Pentagon and corporate capital itself, with the collapse of the Soviet Union, there was the necessity to find an alternative ideological rationale for $9.3 trillion handed to the Pentagon in a space of 40 years, more than the combined value of everything produced in this society. Indeed, on September 10th, 2001, Dan Rather acknowledged that $2.3 trillion had been lost by the Pentagon in the preceding year. And the Government Accounting Office calculated that the total lost had been over $4.4 trillion. What does that mean, to lose $4.4 trillion? It disappears into offshore accounts and the numbered accounts. It sustains the black budgets. Helen Caldicott once calculated that $1 trillion is $1,000 a minute every minute since the life of Jesus. Plunder on this scale by a rapacious kleptocracy cannot be carried through except through perpetuating lies and deceit and false flag operations. And that is the underlying meaning and context of such events as those of 9/11. The false category of terror. It did not fall from the sky. Indeed, a young man of the age of 27 at the time, named Benjamin Netanyahu, was assigned the task of creating a series of conferences. Now, it's interesting because the Israeli publication Ha'ir, in articles by Neve Gordon that were subsequently reproduced in the Washington Report on the Middle East, described how Netanyahu's files differ from many. He has four social security numbers and operated under four nom de plume for the Central Intelligence Agency: Benjamin Netanyahu, Benjamin Netai, John J. Sullivan, and John J. Sullivan Jr. And in that capacity, he proceeded, with substantial funding, to organize a series of conferences on the necessity for an anti-terror campaign. And he did this as well in close coordination with the Council on Foreign Relations. The Ha'ir articles and those in the Haaretz describe how Netanyahu was to arrange the conference in Jerusalem in close conjunction with George Shultz and George Bush Sr. The 1984 Council on Foreign Relations event had present in support CNN, the New York Times, the Washington Post, Newsweek. It was much orchestrated. And what was set forth was that there was a new menace in the world, namely that of terror. And it was necessary to begin to attack on a permanent basis all those states that were considered harbingers of terror. And as it would turn out, most of them were located where oil was to be found and oil was to be secured. Jerusalem, July 2nd to 5th, 1979, 50 statesmen, scholars, and journalists from a dozen countries, Jean Kirkpatrick, Secretary of State George P. Shultz, a series of State Department and Defense Intelligence Agency officials, Eugene Rostow, organized around this project. The conferences would then move to Washington, D.C., and they would form the basis of a stratagem, which was to find the pretext and the opportunity to seize oil directly in the Arab East. Consider Robert Tucker writing in 1975 in commentary, Oil, the Issue of American Intervention. Without intervention, there is a distinct possibility of an economic and political disaster bearing more than a superficial resemblance to the disaster of the 1930s. And he identified the area that was to be seized as the Arab shoreline of the Gulf and its interior in Mesopotamia, a new El Dorado awaiting its conquistador. Later, in a document that was distributed in 1979 by Lawrence Moshe, it put forward a plan for a 100,000-man quick-strike force to be organized, but in the Defense Department, the following memorandum was prepared. One needs a real boogeyman to come in and have to be stopped before we will be able to sell the quick-strike force, and it may turn out that the boogeyman may not be defined the same in Arabic as in English. Essentially, then, the demonization of others to provide a rationale and pretext for long-standing plans for the seizure of resources and for dismantling of regimes that were in control to some degree of their own resources was put into play. And this, then, is the context, and this, then, is the background, and this, then, is the reason for the false flag operations of which 9/11 is a prime example.
And we are back with a Taking Aim special here on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York. Ralph, Maya?
Yes, hi, Max.
Hello.
Thanks a lot for engineering with us this evening. And, folks, 212-209-2950, the pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid, for your contribution to WBAI. It's your gift to yourself, I'm telling you, because WBAI is your program, your station, and Taking AIM is your program. $100 contribution, and for an extra bonus with a $150 contribution, we have for you the Technique of Infamy, the 9/11 Commission cover-up. And this is along with the Pattern of State Terror. You've just heard the beginnings of Ralph's presentation. This was a presentation made at the International Inquiry into 9/11 Phase 1 that took place in San Francisco. Ralph will be appearing in Toronto. I have to hold down the fort here and work. And then the commission here, the international inquiry goes to New York sometime soon, and we hope to both be there with you and all our Taking AIM listeners. Meanwhile, now is the moment to call 212-209-2950. You heard some excerpts. What you haven't heard yet and what you're used to hearing on our Taking AIM programs is Ralph goes into a chapter and verse about the 9/11 cover-up, who's who, from Mohammed Atta to the other figures, and the relationship with U.S. intelligence agencies, why 9/11 is not what the media and what the U.S. rulers are telling you it is supposed to be. 212-209-2950. This is your unique opportunity to contribute to WBAI. Ralph.
Well, as I was listening to the remarks there and where the commentary stopped, we were talking about the category of terror as the ideological integument for imperialism today. Because, brothers and sisters, we all know that the Pentagon is dependent upon an ever-increasing percentage of the gross national product. Over 50% of disposable spending on the part of
discretionary spending.
Excuse me. Thank you, Maya.
None of it is disposable. It's all our money.
Yes, you're right about that. It's only disposable in offshore numbered accounts of discretionary spending. Goes to the military more. That doesn't include the intelligence agencies and their black budgets, the 14 intelligence agencies. They are literally ravaging the society, destroying the infrastructure of our country. It is a sick and decaying system that requires this. And that
nor does that $500 billion, almost $500 billion, nor does that include the additional $200 billion that has been allocated so far for the attack on the peoples of Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yes, and that $200 billion, as we know, is a cosmetic figure because the black budgets are not incorporated. The special forces are not incorporated.
Well,
the
counterintelligence
is not incorporated. And the point about the category of terror, Maya, is this. It was the replacement for the communist menace. Talk about conspiracies, brothers and sisters. Imagine this. More dangerous than 50,000 hydrogen bomb-bearing missiles. More menacing than the Soviet Union. It's Osama bin Laden from his cave in Afghanistan. A few hundred operatives of the U.S. intelligence agency apparatus set up in Afghanistan to wage terror war on behalf of the CIA have now been metastasizing into hundreds of thousands of operatives the world over, more powerful than nation states. This is the category of terror. This is the way in which we provide a substitute ideology for sustaining the garrison state, the martial law state, the gangster state, addicted to arms and addicted to war on a continuing basis. This is the evidence that we seek to bring to bear, meticulous documentation, but above all, a context, a political context that arms us, because we are the many and these are the few, brothers and sisters. This is a system so decadent that it cannot possibly sustain itself over a period of time. When we marshal the evidence about the horrors that are the everyday consequence of this kind of rule, we are very conscious of the fact that people can feel overwhelmed, that people can feel demoralized, and that people can feel atomized and helpless in the face of such overweening power and such ruthless application of that power in our everyday lives. But please, we must keep in mind, and we're dedicated to providing the insight and the inspiration for an understanding that sees that such a tiny, isolated, and despicable handful of people cannot sustain rule over any measured period of time. And when we mobilize in our own name, and when we confront them with the reality of their behavior and their acts, and when we disseminate that truth so it seizes the consciousness of people, and when we provide an opening forward, when we break with that structure of power, when we organize in our own name, when working people take that decision into their own hands, this is us, sleeping giant brothers and sisters. We will realize our potential in massive resistance. That is our task and opportunity, and that is where information and knowledge and the confidence that arises from it is so critical. Without knowledge, without information, without theory, there is no praxis. But then, again, in the beginning was the deed. That's the intellectual dialectic between information and action that we need, and the political analysis that arms us to prepare for struggles ahead, which we will inexorably win. I have no doubt about it. It's an isolated cabal, a discredited cabal, an increasingly hated cabal. Please, see the relationship between information and broadcasting and mobilizing and struggle and the ultimate bid for power, because we cannot contain these people. We cannot influence them. We cannot change them. We cannot reform them. We can only overthrow them. That is our task. That's our opportunity. And that's what this broadcasting is designed to permit, to facilitate, and to see occur. Please support our programming and taking aim.